This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
You're listening to the iFanboy 2006 Year-End Roundup.
Welcome to part two of iFanboy.com's 2006 year-end media roundup. If you missed part one, where we talked about movies and TV, be sure to go back to iFanboy.com or to iTunes or to any other podcast provider and download it. But now, let's tune back into the conversation as we start talking about IPTV.
So Ron, what was the big sort of technology revolution this year that really hit hard?
Well, and it's related to what we're talking about, is that I think this is the first year that IPTV or video online was, you know, it's gotten a lot of popularity with YouTube and stuff like that, but there's been a...
Did you hear that we were person of the year?
Yeah, I did hear about that.
Yeah.
Time magazine, haha. But what I think has gone under the radar a bit, which I think is going to grow a lot more in 2007, is not so much the user-generated content like on YouTube, but there's actually shows and little networks that are starting to appear online. And honestly, this year is probably the first year where I've watched more video in show format on the web than I have in regular broadcast TV.
You must watch a lot of web video.
I do, actually. What's great is that this year there's a lot of stuff that's out there. Mm-hmm. Now, admittedly, a lot of it started off kind of in the tech-based, you know, because, you know, that's kind of where it all starts. Yeah, that's where it all starts. So, like, there are shows like DL.TV, which has Patrick Norton, used to be on the screensavers on Tech TV, mm-hmm. And things like InDigital, which has Will Wheaton as one of the hosts, and that's kind of a gadget show and that sort of thing. They've really kind of emerged as... kind of the front runners of this kind of thing. Command N, a show out of Canada with a cute chick who hosts it, talk about the news and the web and stuff like that. But what's really been cool is that it happened a little bit in 2005, but I really think it hit stride in 2006.
It really blew up.
It blew up to not just be tech content anymore. It's a lot of comedy.
A lot of entertainment.
Yeah,
entertainment.
And Connor, you've been watching, and Josh, you've been getting on board mm-hmm. with it a little bit. I mean, like, Ask a Ninja, if anybody has heard of that. I mean, it's a little 5-minute show with a ninja answering questions.
It should come out more regularly.
It should, but it's hysterical. It's great. And French Maid TV, which is how-to videos of the French Maids, although they're starting to become chills.
Yeah. Well, they suck at us. They drew us in at the French Maid girls.
Yeah, and
now suddenly we're being sold products.
Right.
What are they selling products for?
Services.
Anything,
I never watched
like BarterBee.com and websites and stuff like that. And there's a show...
Tiki Bar TV.
Well, I was just going to say, there are two shows that stand out as probably the best must-see IPTV for us, at least. Tiki Bar TV is one of them.
Which is a little 7-minute skit show.
Forbidden Drinks in the Swank Pad.
Yeah, it's about drinking.
It's, I
couldn't get into it.
What's ironic is that I don't drink. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not into the drinks. but they write a story and around the drink of the episode. Mm-hmm. And of course, they do the how-to, but it's the story of each episode that's hysterical. I mean, it's just, it's great. I mean, there's a character, Dr. Tiki, and he's the one who writes the drink prescriptions, and the bartender, and Lala dances. But it's when it comes out, it's must.
That's most of the shows. Blah, 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 and Lala dances.
Yeah, exactly. But probably the one that stands out the best this year. It's a lame duck almost. It's going to end soon. But the show with Zay Frank.
It's going to end soon.
Yeah, yeah. He's only
doing it for
year.
1 year. He started March 17th last year.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh my god.
I just started watching it.
I know. You go back and watch everything.
Oh. It's a 1 year project. He does 5 minute daily weekday.
Just, 5 days a week, 5 minute episode.
Ride the Fire Eagle Danger Day.
He produces it all himself, and it's, I mean, my routine when I come home now is I come home, I turn my computer on, and I pull up the Democracy video player, and that automatically downloads any new shows, and I immediately watch Zay.
How do you watch Zay?
Through his website.
I watch it on iTunes.
Yeah.
Which is interesting that everybody watches it differently.
Well, that's the cool thing about, like, and that's the big difference in why we think the revolution is coming, is that with the old model, you had to wait till the show was on, repeat, stuff like that happens. Now, it's online, there's 7 different ways to get it. You can sign up for the RSS feed, you can watch it off the website, you can BitTorrent it, you can watch it, you know, in the Flash player on their sites and stuff like that. So it's really kind of giving you the power to pick when you want to watch and what you want to watch. And with Apple's iTV coming out next year, and TiVo is going to probably start pulling in this video. In fact, they already do with Rocket Boom, which is a 5 minute daily news show. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, it's, I really think that 2006 was kind of like the groundbreaking year for it. I think it's just going to explode in 2007. So I don't know. So check it out.
You guys should totally watch Zay Frank. I think
it's great.
Everybody should. Yeah.
Yeah. Zayfrank.com/the show.
Listen, though, and, I'm thinking about it. The dude who does a show with himself producing it, where he puts his face in a big camera. You gotta have an ego to do that.
Well, he's funny. Totally.
Yeah, no, he is, but he knows it too.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. But we'll post links to all these shows, and we strongly recommend you check them out. 2006 was definitely, I think, the breakthrough year for IPTV, and hopefully 2007 will be that much better.
Yeah, I'm assuming it will.
Hopefully Zay doesn't quit completely, but he probably will, which is good. Go out on top.
You gotta admire it.
Yeah, I definitely do admire it. So
I think that this year in music was probably my least. I don't know anything that's going on in music.
Well,
so
it's interesting because we weren't going to do a music segment.
Yeah,
I mean, we had. In fact, last year we did video games,
right?
But we cut that this year because we haven't really played video games because we've been so busy with the podcast and with the site.
No video gaming.
No video gaming.
I've been playing The Godfather.
But not to the extent that we did in 2005. We played a lot more video games.
I've been playing World of Warcraft.
Have you? Oh. It's like.
Oh, if you told that, we'd take you to a meeting.
But so we cut music, and I remember Josh was saying, "Well, what are we going to replace it with?" We're like, "Should we do music?" We're like, nothing really. But actually, just recently, a friend of mine asked me to send her my top 10 records of 2006, and I was like, "Geez, I don't even have 10 records. I'm stuck listening. I'm in the mid 90s. You know, I'm still listening to all my old stuff." And I went through iTunes and I sorted it by date added, in my library, and I bought and downloaded a shitload of music this year, and I was like, "Oh my god, a lot of stuff came out."
How did you buy most of it and download?
Combination. My new music purchasing thing is I have a monthly subscription to eMusic, and I'll download a song or two to check something out. Mm-hmm. And if I dig it, then I'll download the whole album. If I really dig it, then I'll go to Amazon, I'll buy the CD, and I'll buy the CD and then rip it.
Really? Yeah. After you pay for it on eMusic?
Well, because eMusic is a subscription.
Right.
So I pay $9 for 30 downloads.
Right.
So, but the thing is, there's some titles that I, like, for example, the Decemberist new record, The Crane Wife that came out this year, mm-hmm. I didn't even download a song I knew I'm going to buy, so I just bought the CD. But I don't buy via iTunes because I don't like the DRM. And ultimately, if I had to choose, I mean, like comics, I'm a collector, and I want the CD. I want the artwork.
I like the freedom of the CD.
You can do what you want with it.
And, like, you know, if the hard drive gets wiped out, it sucks that I have to digit it all in again, but I still can.
Right.
And Bill Gates agrees.
He does.
Anyway.
So just real quickly, I thought I wanted to share my top 10 records of 2006.
This is Ron's probably responsible for picking the majority of the music on the podcast, so those people who said we really like the music, you'll probably like this stuff.
This is what I've been listening to. Although, admittedly, I'm getting a little wussier as I get older. So when I was younger, I was a little more edgy. But
not so edgy now.
First record is a very indie, up-and-coming band called The Fleeting Joys, and their album was called Despondent Transponder, and you can find it on iTunes. They are basically, if you ever knew My Bloody Valentine, which was a pre-alternative college rock noise band.
Precursors of Smashing Pumpkins, kind
of. Yeah. Fleeting Joys is a My Bloody Valentine total ripoff, but they do it really well, and it's really good. A band called The Blow, and their album just came out recently called Paper Television. Similar to similar to the Postal Service, and that's kind of like an electronica drum, you know, kind of drum bass, where a guy does the music and but a girl is singing. I actually saw this band by accident in New York City, and she was amazing. And
I tripped, and I found myself at a show.
No, I was at a show, and I was waiting for the last band, and all of a sudden she starts playing, and we turned around, and we're like, "What is this?" And it was great, so good that we went right to her table and bought every CD there. It was great. It was awesome. And I turned you on to it. So, next record is Regina Spektor's new record.
I've heard a lot about this.
Begin to Hope. It's really good. Actually, Josh, I think you might dig it. It's very, very good.
This is the one from the Christmas album?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Phil Spector.
No, no, she spells it differently. She's a Russian girl, and she lived in New York. And
every time I heard the name, I just figured it was a Motown artist making a comeback.
Yeah, no, she she put out a record a couple of years ago, and it was mainly piano, her piano, playing piano and singing. Mm-hmm. And this record, she kind of expanded and got a little more musicians and got a little funkier, and it's really good. Next record was actually recommended to me by the dude from the site, M. Ward, Post-War. Really good, kind of alt-country-esque kind of singer-songwriter stuff. Really good. I used it on one of the podcasts, so very, very good.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah.
Send me that.
Mates of State, album called Bring It Back.
Oh, I have something to say on this.
Okay, what do you have to say?
I saw them. They opened for Death Cab for Cuties, who I saw in the Greek Theater right before I left L.A., which was an amazingly good show.
Yeah.
You'd been telling me to listen to them, and I think the dude also had mentioned it, and I've heard this stuff.
Chris Morley likes them, too.
Yeah, and I'd heard some of the tracks, and I didn't really like it when I listened to it.
Yeah.
Saw it live, and I was like, oh, that's crazy. And, like, I can't tell you I like it, but I'm transfixed by it a
little bit. Totally intoxicating. What it is, it's a guy and girl, they're married, and the chick plays keyboards, and the guy plays drums, and they both sing.
And they harmonize a lot.
Yeah, and it's so poppy, and it's just so much. And the thing is, they put out their first record was amazing, mm-hmm. and their next two blew, and then this one came out, and it was awesome again. It was great, so very good. This past March, my personal Jesus, Morrissey, came out with his latest record, Ringleader of the Tormentors, and I just got to mention it.
I'm shocked to see this.
Biased. Yeah. Biased!
so that's all I need to say. Teddy Thompson, album called Separate Ways. Teddy Thompson is the son of a folk singer, I think Linda Thompson, and I actually saw him open for Rufus Wainwright a couple years ago, and he played backup guitar for Rufus Wainwright. He played in the band. His own record, very biting British wit, but with like a kind of all-country folk kind of feel to it. Good, very good stuff, very chill. Belle and Sebastian, in the beginning of 2006, came out with their new record, The Life Pursuit. If you know Belle and Sebastian, you know what to expect. They're Scottish Brit poppy. This one is a little more funky, had a little 70s feel to it, but it was super good. It's a lot of fun. Harkening back to our movies thing, the Stranger Than Fiction movie soundtrack was probably the first soundtrack I've bought in years.
Since the Garden State soundtrack.
Exactly. This one, a lot of the music, the band Spoon, that's on Merge Records, did
I believe they also opened for Death Cab on that show.
They did a lot of songs directly for the movie, so the soundtrack has a lot. But this has got a lot of like classic punk and stuff, like The Clash and Reckless Eric from Stiff Records and stuff like that. It was just really, really good. The Jam, I mean, like the music was as good as the movie. So
this last one's got a fantastic name.
Yeah, well, the last one is purely because of the name of the band. I saw this name on eMusic. I saw the name of the band. I'm like, I've got to download this. The band name is I Love You, But I've Chosen Darkness. And the album was Fears on Our Side.
Was it any good?
It was great. I thought it was going to be like a hardcore kind of like type of thing, but it's actually kind of reminded me of New Order a little. It was like kind of, you know, like...
That sort of thing where long titles like that are... I don't want to say emo bands, but like newer sort of alt bands. Like there's the new Yola Tango album is something, has a name sort of like that. I Don't Like You and I Will Beat Your Ass or something
like that.
Which I downloaded based on that. I was like, that's an incredible
Yola Tango is one of those bands who I think I'm supposed to like. I've heard them, but I don't like.
Me too.
I was like,
I have to try, I guess.
I was in Seattle a few months ago and they were playing and I was looking through something to do, somewhere to go. I'm like, oh, Yola Tango's playing. I'm like, I should go to that. I'm like, but I just didn't go. I was like, whatever. And then finally, I mentioned earlier the Decemberists, the Crane Wife, which is fantastic record by an amazing band. So
that was actually a top 11.
That was my top 11, yes. So
if you're not a white male in college, this list might not work for you.
Yeah, not so much.
But,
and I hear Jay-Z's record's fantastic.
How about he retires like he said he was going to?
Don't get me started on that. So, So yes, that was the year of music for me, and I know I'm the big music fan out of the three of us. But I was surprised that I bought this much music. I honestly was surprised, and legally.
You know my favorite song.
Very
this,
few.
You know my favorite song this year was
what?
Willie Nelson's "Cowboys Are Frequently Fond of Each Other."
I've got that in my iPod.
I downloaded that.
No, it's "Cowboys Are Secretly Frequently Fond of Each Other."
It was like number one download for like a couple of weeks around the same time that "Brokeback Mountain" came out.
Yeah,
it's a fantastic song. Like I first heard it and I was like, "You got to be kidding me!" These lyrics, like it was just clever and fun and cool. And you love that Willie Nelson is taking that side.
Yeah,
well, he's a.
It spawned me like a 3-month Willie Nelson time.
he's a classic.
When I was driving across the country, I started every day with Willie on the road again.
And it probably does. It should go. I mean, we probably should mention that probably the highlight of live music this year was the Texas Is the Reunion.
Yes,
Texas Is the Reason reunion show that Connor and I went to.
Their final show.
The last night, Sunday after Thanksgiving, Texas Is the Reason was a band about 10 years ago, a post-hardcore. In fact, a lot of the music that's really popular now owes their sound to this band. In my opinion, I don't know, they might disagree, but that's what I believe. And they got back together for a reunion after 10 years after their breakup, and it was amazing. It was awesome.
Ron took me in. It was an unbelievable show.
Yeah.
And then, I guess, on the same Death Cab for Cutie show that I saw at the Greek Theater. If you've ever been to the Greek Theater, it's like a little outdoor amphitheater in LA. It's one of the greatest places to see a show. And I'm the same way. You know how I was bitching earlier about going to the movies and not liking crowds? I hate concert crowds 3 times more than I hate movie crowds. Freaking great show. Mates of State was there. I think Spoon was the other band, but like at the end everybody comes out and plays with them, and it was like this big jam, and I was like, and it wasn't an irritating show with lots of kids and everything, just really fantastic show. But now they're like a big bunch of stars up for Grammys and things like that.
Yeah, well,
didn't see that coming.
Well, no, I'm not surprised. I mean,
no, I'm not either. Yeah, they deserve it and everything. Yeah, but exactly, I'm like, yeah. Oh,
well, what are you gonna do? There'll be another one soon, so
yeah, you'll have to tell me about it. Because I'm just not paying attention to music anymore.
Well, that's the thing, is neither am I, really. Like I mean, like one of the things is that like I'm not paying attention. I mean, like I said, the dude pointed out Anne Ward to me, and like I chased down Regina Spektor's record because I listened to her old one. Like the fact that, you know, I Love You But I've Chosen Darkness is really the only new band that I discovered in the Blow, I guess, is that I discovered, you know, like but everything else was recommended to me or followed through on or whatever, you know. But
I only procure music. I like music that's fallen off the truck.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's like the predict. I can make a 2007 prediction that perhaps the Shins' new record might make a best of 2007 if one were to have these songs before they came out at the end of January.
I don't think that's wrong because they're not available anyway.
Right.
And you will probably. You.
I'm going to buy it.
You will buy the. And I will. I will buy that album.
Yeah, I may have had it fall off the truck in my lap. Just saying, hypothetically.
Hypothetically. So, anyway, but it was a good year for music, so which is nice, which is a nice little surprise as we land on the year.
See.
I think we better get to what we do best.
Should we? What do we talk about? Why are we here?
Wait, you know what? That
beating
was about,
down bitches.
That was a...
I'm tired.
That was a very presumptive statement I made there. that's what we do best.
Right,
maybe
yes.
People right now are going, you know what? We've seen what else.
That's what we do.
I sleep.
Okay, right. Here's what we usually do.
Here's what we usually do.
Comics.
Comic books.
Listen, 2006, and I don't know how to view this from not within the lens of iFanboy.
Right.
Because iFanboy, sort of, we had I would call it a banner year in 2006.
Sure,
we did
yeah.
a lot, we saw a lot, we went through a lot.
It's like a war.
Now, but at the same time, I feel like... it's not like war.
It's not at all like war.
I lost a limb.
Come here, Stumpy. Help me open this.
The RSS feed claimed my left leg.
Oh, boy. But didn't it feel to you guys like this was the biggest year in comics in a long time?
I don't know. I don't know if it was or if because we just dove in the deep end.
I think it's more of our involvement increased. Not our... Mm. Let me rephrase that. Not our involvement, but our interaction with the
other comic
world.
Fans, yeah.
Maybe, but I still feel
because
like...
Because I felt like the comics last year were better.
Maybe, but
really?
I feel
Name
like...
Really? Name one. Go.
I thought Daredevil was a lot better last year than this year.
Wow. Bold.
Really?
Yes.
Bold.
Okay.
And Gotham Central last year.
You guys in the Gotham Central
Well,
over.
Yeah, but what... I mean...
I think
I
this
say
year
is
there's
that
been too many...
Events.
We're going to get to this later on, but the events this year really dragged
They put a shadow on the comics.
Yep. That's my
opinion. For me, I mean, and again, this might just be the site, but I'm reading a lot more this year than I was last year.
I feel the pressure, too.
That's what I mean by our involvement has increased this year.
Yeah. But I don't know.
Quantities
I feel like,
increased.
I feel like
the
company. See, I don't know. I feel like the companies have taken their really good guys and they've put them on a lot of their really key properties, and they're letting them go with that. And just overall, I don't know. I think there's a lot of good books going on right this year that weren't good titles last year, is what I mean to say. Yeah. Like, there's more, just even, and it's almost, I mean, the indie stuff and the creator-owned stuff is always what it is, and there will always be good stuff because people are working on it and doing what they do. But when you really want to gauge it, like, the mainstream industry, there's a lot of solid titles out there now, and I don't think you could say that last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm buying more on a weekly basis. I'm regularly over 10 books a week.
I'm buying more simply because of Civil War.
I'm buying more.
Oh no, I'm definitely not.
I am. Once Civil War ends,
I'm buying DC books now that I never would have started bought before.
You see, but that's different. Is that I think you're buying the Civil War books because of the event and because you feel as if you have to because you're interested. Whereas I think you're being enlightened to more DC books. You know what I mean? Like,
the thing
like
is, I was already buying those books, so it's not new to me.
Right, but there's some new Marvel stuff that you'll keep buying. You'll keep buying X Factor after Civil War.
That's not new.
So.
Talking about it's not new.
Yeah, no, but well, it's new this year.
It is. It's new for me.
14 started last year.
Yeah, but it gelled this year.
Well, that's a good segue into. Right. Okay, so if we had to pick the top three titles of 2006,
and we agree on this.
Yeah,
this should be like this doesn't happen a lot, but all three of us just said what are the ones that we should talk about.
Right. So in no particular order, the first one is Daredevil. And this year we saw the switch over between Bendis and Maleev to Brubaker and Lark.
And this all happened on our watch on the podcast.
Yeah,
so
which
like
is kinda cool.
We've been talking about it before it happened and like how will it happen and when it happened. Oh my god, it's happening and now
it's so much sweeter because we thought it would never be possible for the book to be as good after Bendis left and it's almost...
I can't think of one time where a run has ended and then a run started right after it that was as good or you know.
Well this is I mean the other like the thing is that Bendis run was epic. It was years long.
Yeah. I mean, Brubaker still has a long way to go to match.
Yeah,
right,
and the French stuff is kind of getting a little tired.
No, it's not. But <Just kidding. laughs> I mean,
it's hard to say we're in the middle of.
Bendis went 5 years,
something like that.
I was explaining it to somebody at work today, and I was like, it's an amazing long run, and
Brubaker's been great, but he's got to go another 4 years to match.
Yeah,
and he's not going to. That's just. Well, he might have a great like 2 year run. But he's not going to do 4 years in the book. He doesn't go that long.
No one does that anymore.
You don't know.
I think you can take empirically.
I don't feel like. Bendis has a real affinity for Daredevil. They're like, what do you want to work on? I want to work on Daredevil, and I want to own that character. I want to get in it, know what it is, and do it. I don't get that with Brubaker.
Yeah. He just wants to tell a good story.
Which is why I feel like I'd be on the book for 5 years, which is fine. But and also, if you think about it, really nobody but Bendis does these year-long runs, like Ultimate Spider-Man.
Well, nobody else can get away
Daredevil,
with it.
Daredevil.
Nobody else gets the benefit of doubt so much from the public. However, if Brubaker leaves, you know, I can do... Now, Michael Lark, is he going to be allowed to do other books? Because I would like him to not.
I think his finances might have a disagreement with you there.
I would like him to keep doing Daredevil.
Will you stipend him to not?
Listen, guys, whatever it takes. If you want to write in, let's... You know, like I mean, the day that like it's going to be like when Arrested Development ended, like which is a show I didn't get to talk about. I'm segueing now. No, not really. I'm not going to talk about it. But like when Michael Lark leaves that book, I'm going to be sad.
Yeah,
because that's.
Well, I was sad when Maleev left. I was in love with Maleev at the end of it. I mean, like Alex Maleev, I love you.
But you just got a little taste of him now.
Yeah,
I think it depends on where he goes.
He doesn't belong in Avengers, though.
No, he doesn't. That's a film. I mean,
right?
A single one. Yeah, yeah. So
what if he ends up?
He's doing Spider Woman. Isn't that the next thing they're working on? Maleev and Bendis are doing Spider Woman. Yeah,
awesome.
In 2007. Yeah, so. Anyway, so Daredevil, but still, it continued to roll on.
Which is great, because it was one of our books from last year's show.
Yeah, but, you know, everyone, it makes me want, you know, that makes me want the next one.
The next two books
are sleepers. We're sleepers.
Sleeper books.
Well, you kicked off The Escapists, Connor.
And we just talked about it on the Peak of the Week podcast.
So we won't really get into it, but The Escapists was clearly, I mean, it only was half the year, but, I mean, it was...
It was must-read. I mean, greatness in six issues.
And I think the surprise element of it added to the greatness of it.
Yeah.
And the fact that, it, like, the story, it was not... I mean, it was a standard story, but it was not. Because they, you know, it twisted and it moved and it did what the story was supposed to do, but it surprised you when it did it. It didn't do the predictable thing. It did the right thing. And that's exactly what it was. And
which was the point of the story, too.
Yeah.
Which is nice how that worked. So.
So good.
So
and,
good.
And, it, yeah.
Ron...
And the last best book of the year, the other sleeper, was X Factor by Peter David and Mixed Artists. this is the book that I was very excited about because it starred one of my favorite characters, Jamie Madrox. and coming off the heels of the Mandrax miniseries a few years ago, I didn't, much like Heroes, I didn't think it was going to last. I didn't think it would make 6 issues, much less 12 issues.
Much less 14 issues?
Much less that I would get you guys to read it. Not that I tried. I didn't even think I tried to get you guys to read it. I was just like, it's really good. Yeah.
Peter David's X Factor.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and the fact that Josh picked it up was, I didn't, you know, I didn't even petition at all. I wasn't like, you have to read this.
I
was,
you know, I think,
I thought, enjoy that you didn't. It was,
I think that it happened one week that I went in there and I didn't really have a lot of books one particular week. And I think we had just done a pick of the week with number 2 or something like that. And I was like, I don't know, I'll pick it up.
Was the one when he pushed Richter, when Richter was going to kill himself, and the unpredictable Madrox, the dude pushed him out. Like,
I picked it up, and I remember going, I don't know what's happening. I don't know who these people are. I don't know anything, but I kept buying it. And then I think it was when I made it pick of the week, like number 10 or something like that, and all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute.
Right.
I'm really into this, and it's really good. It snuck up on me, but it did it in such a subtle way.
Yeah, that's
it's
exactly
so
it.
Good, but you don't. I couldn't tell you why exactly.
I mean, a lot of people would argue that of the X-Men books, Astonishing X-Men is the breakout best book of them all.
Which is good.
Which is good. Very good, and don't get me wrong, but it's a little easy to pick that. And also the bi-monthly schedule kind of gets me.
Yeah, the
and,
fact that it doesn't come out, you know, regularly.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, every month we've had X-Factor, and they've dealt with art changes. And
well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Furthermore, you know, like normally when a book, when
a book 5 or 6 pencilers
juggles pencilers like this,
year.
You can't. But like, I guess the storytelling of it, and, and I'll give credit to the editing as well. Like, it's just been so damn consistent in if not artist, but look and feel, and just story and character is so strong that it goes through that. And this is going to be one of those things that this is going to be one of those runs that people talk about. You know, like in 4 years, if we're still doing this show.
Right.
people are like, what should I buy? We're like, you should go back and buy
X-Factor Volume 1, Volume 2. Yeah, totally. And the thing is that if I had to compare 2006 of X-Factor versus 2006 of Astonishing X-Men, the Hellfire stuff was pretty cool, and so there were some good moments in Astonishing X-Men, but as far as issue-to-issue quality, X-Factor hands down.
Clearly.
Hands down, So I don't know how X-Factor holds up against that first year, that first arc of Astonishing X-Men. You know, like, that was really, really good.
Never read it. Same thing. I picked up. This is the year that I started reading all this stuff that I hadn't. So I picked up everything in the middle of it.
Yeah. So anyway, so those are our 3 top books of 2006.
I think if you could describe 2006, it would be the year of the event.
Yes. Feels like the 90s again.
But you know, like, they were events that were based around story, as opposed to like, what if the Hulk exploded? Like, you know, it wasn't a. I don't know what the word is. A circus stunt. Event.
It didn't matter. It was thought out.
Yeah. It was like, and that is why
ramifications.
That's why comics are good now. Right. Is that it's all based on stories, and the superstars are writers.
Now, that's true. On the other hand, it's time for the events to end.
Yes. I think we're all in agreement of that.
1 year later feels like 12 years later.
Well, 1 year later is over, basically.
No, I know that, but I'm just. Yeah, it was a metaphor,
it's more.
Really.
I think it's not so much the DC events because they pretty much are over. Civil War needs to end.
Well, it's tough because with DC, you had Infinite Crisis started off the year by ending it, and then that led into 1 year later, which also led into 52.
And the thing is, 1 year later isn't really an event; it's just the books.
Right.
There's no event. There's nothing tying them together. You don't need to read them.
I still feel, looking back in 2006, I feel as if 1 year later was half-assed in my mind. I think they half-assed it.
I don't at all.
I don't because it's impossible to half-ass something that's not cohesive.
I think they half-assed.
Like, basically, what they did was they needed a starting point for everything to go.
Right.
And so, basically, it was a way of rebooting everything, but without rebooting it in a lame-ass way.
Right.
It was like, let's give everybody a fresh... And I was listening to Dan Didio talk about this Word Balloon, I think, and he was just saying, he's like, they took all the characters down to their, what is it people like about this character?
Right.
And they got rid of all the stuff that people didn't like about it and started over again with those fresh elements. And I think that they got a lot of good out of
it. They've been ultimately really successful with it.
I agree, and I'm reading a lot of those books where I wasn't before. And it isn't so much about, when you say 1 year later didn't work, it's not so much about...
I didn't work.
I not so much about the stunt of the 1 year later. It was like, it was a means to an end. And I think it worked really well.
Yeah.
Galactic did the same thing at one point, where they just skipped everything ahead 1 year, so they didn't have to go through all the muddle of everything. It just gave them a place to start. And I think that's a good place. Like, right now, we can point to books that people can go start reading pretty easily, where maybe as before in DC you couldn't have done that.
No, the only thing that they didn't do well was they tried to relaunch a bunch of second-tier characters.
Right.
But I would say that's less to do with the event and more to do with the fact that some characters just shouldn't have books.
Martian Manhunter.
Martian Manhunter, Blue Beetle. Atom, Blue Beetle. People should not have books.
But
that's got nothing to do with.
But you know what? Every once in a while, one of those catches, and you got to try a bunch.
Sure, you have to try, but that, I think my point is it has nothing to do with the event.
I agree.
How they executed the books.
However, you know, you want to look at the event in that way. It sure as hell helped Superman. It sure as hell helped Batman and his family.
Green Arrow.
It didn't help Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman.
Did.
Well, it's too early to tell.
There have been two issues have come out.
But they've been great.
Right, but they're
and the two
Heinberg.
Issues. Have you read Wonder Woman?
I read issue one.
Yeah.
Did you read Wonder Woman pre 1 year later?
No, I didn't.
Well,
no.
There you go. It was successful at being a much better book than the previous.
If the book existed, I may be able to agree with you, but it doesn't.
Green Lantern?
Except on a schedule, on a preview.
Now, you guys come around to Green Lantern?
Yeah, it's been a lot better, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
Crap.
Damn tattoo won't come off.
JSA.
JSA was great. But JSA was the 1 year late. JSA
and your guys' opinion is Justice League, but they're... The reason I think you don't like it is because they fucked Flash.
No, I don't.
They did.
Yeah, a little bit.
And
but
I think the Flash has been really good.
I've been warming up to the Flash, the Flash has gotten better. I've stuck with it. I haven't given up so easily.
You're grudgingly saying it's better. It's not that.
Now, in that sense, what do you guys, as time goes on, what do you think about 52 then?
I think it's been really good.
I think like I said, we gave our grades a couple episodes ago. I still firmly give it a B+. I think it's been great.
The more it goes on, the more impressed I am with it. It keeps coming out. It's trucking.
Yeah.
The sales. We were talking about the sales of it. Yeah. I mean, like, from a business standpoint, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And the fact that they did it, you know, like because they
It's not done yet, but they're close.
I know, but like, one thought they'd have gone this far. Like at this point, we're like, oh, they're coasting. Maybe they won't. But
I still wish they hadn't have half-assed the art. But I understand why. I understand what happened with it. But that's my one regret about it. I wish they had paid a little more attention to the art.
I think that if they had gone for like an A1 number class artist, they would have gotten behind. They were like, we need guys.
Who are fast.
We need guys who put panels together and put the pages down and go.
I think it was genius to have Giffen do the layouts. I mean, I think that was smart, but I would have liked to have seen a little more consistency or quality or it feels like there's no tension to it. Like, it was just get the art done, and I feel like that's such a huge part of this medium,
I think what they realized was, like, if we announce this weekly series, we cannot miss a week.
Yeah,
and if we miss
that.
A week, the Jackals are going to descend, so we have to just make guys, get guys who
and
can
spit the
Jackals, the art out.
The Jackals are off. Like, I don't get that sense.
No.
Like, before it started, they're going to mess this up of impending doom. And,
well, they owe that to the folks across the street.
Yeah, right. So. Well, that's true. it still feels so big, and like, I got every week, I'm like, ooh, another one. Now, it's not rocket science. It feels like maybe this is more what comic books used to feel like. That pulp serialized fiction that just keeps coming at you all the time. It's not award-winning stuff.
I really like
pretty good.
I really like the little touch of whoever came up with it to actually tie in the issues to what was actually going on in the real world. Like this week's issue was Christmas themed and the Thanksgiving themed and the Halloween themed, 4th of July. That was just a little subtle touch that made it so good. And plus also I think that the not connected to the 52 story, but the two-page origin story backups have been
really
fantastic.
Oh, they've been great. They kicked the hell out of the history of the DC universe.
Yeah, that was
in the
awful.
Beginning.
Yeah.
What I'm the thing is I'm really looking forward to is I want to know like what the ending. I want to know what's this 52.
Right.
I'm excited for the end of the story. I'm hoping it doesn't disappoint.
Yeah.
But
so.
On the other hand, there's Civil War.
Right, as we alluded to earlier, is taking the attention away from 52.
Started off really, really strong.
Started off fantastic with a bang. It was awesome.
Oh, the first three issues, I think, were just knock you out of your socks every month, and you're really excited about them and all the tie-ins and everything. And then
it's December, and it's not over yet. It should be over.
It should
be over.
It's true, and the delays bother people. They didn't bother me that much until I get to think that every book I'm reading from Marvel, sans Brubaker, is Civil War, and I don't feel like anything has changed in 4 months.
That was the point that I made when the delay happened, because I made this point on a thread months ago. But it's like everybody, you were in two camps about the delays, whether or not you were pissed about them or whether or not you accepted them.
Mm-hmm.
And the argument between the accepting seemed to go in the direction of, well, they want to put in a fill-in artist, they want to keep McNiven on it, so it'll be that good. So in a year from now, when you read the Civil War book, it's cohesive and it's good. Look, Watchmen was late, Dark Knight was late, whatever. The problem with that argument is that Watchmen and Dark Knight weren't the linchpin of continuity, and they didn't have other books tied into what happened in those books.
Yeah.
Whereas Civil War, every book, and it touched every book in Marvel except for the ones Brubaker worked on. So, which is genius in its own right. But and thankfully, my Uncanny X-Men were left untouched, which is fantastic. But so the thing about that is that we're stuck, and I feel like whereas in July I love the trade, I love the cover dress, how they all had the consistency of the design. Mm-hmm. Now when I see that cover, I cringe. It's like I'm tired of it. It's sad because it was a great idea, and I just feel as if they're failing on the execution.
It hasn't moved. The story has not moved forward, and we've been stuck for months on this. Yep. Like, yep. Cap is against it.
Yep. Oh, that's not Daredevil. Who is Daredevil?
Is Iron Man a jerk? And yeah. Like, that was really fun in July.
Right.
But it is December now, and right. I just like how much of a breath of fresh air is the friggin' Ultimate books or. Yeah. Just anything else going on that isn't saddled by this civil war.
It's Vietnam. It is. Think about it. It is. It was 1972. And we're like, God, is this war still going on?
Oh, God, I hope there are no veterans listening.
Dun, 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 dun.
I don't even know where to go from that.
So, let's talk about the best event that goes probably underrated. And that's the Wildstorm relaunch.
I'm looking at it. It's the next thing on the list, and you've got this serious look on your face. I'm like, I don't know what he's talking
about. Talk about fumbling the football.
You really didn't see that coming?
No, listen, let me explain.
Okay, Jim, we've got Jim Lee here in studio.
I have a lot of things to do, and I thought that even though I've never been able to put out a regular book on a monthly basis, that I could probably do two, spearhead an entire relaunch, and creative direct the MMORPG from DC.
As well as play World of Warcraft nonstop and burn money. Honey, put another 100 on the fire!
I should probably get rid of this pitch to Wildstorm that I've got right here.
What a disaster.
It's just, more than five. Turn the clock back to when the Captain and Atom series started. Mm. And how, no, we were just like, this is a great concept. This is a great idea. Yeah. And when I said this is going to lead into the Wildstorm relaunch, awesome, they should reboot that thing, whatever. And the reboot is, well, our creators looked at the concepts and like, these are pretty good ideas. Let's do that again.
Yeah, they really did. And let's see, Authority delayed, Wildcats delayed, what else?
I don't know. Wildcats,
that's not even a series. It's a yearly special.
Didn't All-Star Batman get canceled?
No.
That's the rumor.
Yeah. I saw that online. Yeah, it's Jim Lee, 2006 will go down as the year that Jim Lee ruined comics. Actually, and I'm not afraid to say it. I know it's an unpopular opinion.
I'm pretty sure he ruined comics in the mid-90s.
No, he wasn't. He got in and out and that whole thing. Like, that's. I mean, he was fairly unscathed in the 90s, I think. But 2006, I think, is the year that Jim Lee ruined comics.
But people go back to him.
Oh, I'll go back to him. Like when Wildcats 2 comes out in March next year, I'll buy it.
You're going to get a scary voicemail.
I mean...
I know, we're totally going to get a scary voicemail.
Oh, yeah, we are.
So, whatever.
What a horrible
disaster. So, like, train wreck, but a great one. I've enjoyed the Wildstorm implosion. I don't know about you.
So what do you think was the coolest thing that happened this year that also bit into our wallets the most?
Prostitutes.
We're not supposed to talk about that.
Absolute editions.
The absolute editions. Can when you see one of those, do you not like get like I get into cold sweat?
I do.
Like I need it. Like oh, even absolutely. I saw the Sandman one in my comic book store, and I was like, well, I could, that's pretty good.
Can I give you my tale of that? I spent like the last 3 years collecting the 10 Sandman trades.
Now the absolute.
Like literally, the day I get it in the mail, I read about Sandman Volume 1. Son of a. Bitch.
They're so nice.
They're so beautiful. They're so beautiful.
I can't look at them right here. They're right here. Look at them all.
No, those aren't the absolute editions. Those aren't the Sandman books that you bought that aren't the absolute editions. I was looking at the New Frontier in Midtown the other day, and I was like, oh my God, I almost bought it for both of you. And I was just like, I can't spend $75 on both of them.
Oh. Nice.
But sorry.
I think just because we can't spend it on you.
It's on my Christmas list. I'm curious if any of my family got it because it's like that will make me happy.
If I don't get it, I'm going to be getting it first comic store day.
Oh yeah, no, hello Amazon. Totally get it. Beautiful. Love the absolute. And what's the?
I only have one.
The omnibuses aren't that bad. I mean, I think they're as good.
You dropped a ton on the Alias omnibus, Connor.
Not a ton. I got that too.
It was really good. Well, that was good because it collected such a great series.
I reread that whole series this year.
Yeah, in fact, actually, while the Absolute Editions were fantastic, I would say the best collection of this year was that Alias Omnibus. Because have it all in one book.
Well,
it's great.
The thing is, it's great is because it's an entire series.
Yeah.
And it's more than just four issues. So that's in that sense, yes, that's a great collection.
Yeah.
And it's big.
Yeah.
And it's thick and it's juicy.
Hey, the Dark Knight Absolute Edition made the Dark Knight whatever again, too, whatever.
Good. It's on my list, man.
It made it good.
So. Dark Knight.
Absolute's awesome.
Yeah, so. All
right, so who do we think, who defined, really, 2006 in terms of creators? Who were the guys?
Hands down, Jim Lee.
Not the ones that ruined comics.
I will come over there. You know what? I sound like the sock monkey at this point.
Oh, you sound like Rashi.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, you did. That's really weird.
You really were channeling Rashi.
Wow.
So who were the best creators this year? I think it's kind of obvious if you look at our best, our top books of the year.
Let's take a step back. Last year was clearly Bendis. I mean, we were... That was the running joke on the website. I mean, every other pick of the week was a Bendis book.
Bendis was steering the ship.
Yeah, I mean, it was, still it was Daredevil, it was Ultimate Spider-Man, yeah. It was Powers, it was last year was Bendis.
Bendis. This
and right year, now, you'd think, just before you say, you'd think that we if you had looked at, if you looked at the beginning of the year, you'd think that we would be talking about Mark Miller right now. I mean,
because
in a way.
Civil War?
Yeah, I mean,
well,
really,
we didn't know about Civil War in the beginning of the year.
I know, but I'm saying, like, looking at it from the beginning, like, at the end of the year. And even after the first issue or so, you're like, you
this
know,
is going to be the defining
boy,
moment.
But I don't ever think of Mark Miller anymore.
No, yeah, no. It doesn't matter.
So, this year...
I think two writers stand out.
Brubaker and Brian K. Vaughan. I think it's hard to, I mean, it's hard to argue that, right?
Pretty much. I mean, you know, in mainstream comics, I'll put that, you know, in that context.
With Brubaker, you had... Captain America, Daredevil, Criminal,
Uncanny X-Men.
X-Men.
Yep.
What else did he do?
Sleeper wasn't this year.
No, it wasn't. No, but I think it's not so much that what he did, but it's look at the order
Gotham
that
Central
he...
Gotham Central ended up this year.
Well, yeah, look at the order that happened. Is they finished up Gotham Central, then he moved over to Marvel. Okay, and very, you know, and Captain America was going, to me, under the radar. Like, I know
it's
you
still
were
under
reading,
the radar.
Yeah, and, you know, very, very good. And then... The big switchover with Daredevil happens, and that's like, oh man, what's going to happen? Remember, we were just talking about that, and it turned out to be really good. Then, out of nowhere, he gets put on Uncanny X-Men, and I know you guys didn't like it as much, but me as the X-Men loyalist, I think it's great. It's, you know, it's hitting on notes that haven't been hit on in years, and I think he's doing a great job. But then finishing up the year with Criminal, at, you know, going back to that kind of sleeper-esque noir kind of, you know, labor
well,
of love,
sleeper more like, back to Scene of the Crime.
Yeah, but it was. It was such a well-rounded year for Brubaker,
totally.
I think, you know? Like, it hit
he
on
a lot
every...
of different genres, a lot of different styles.
I mean, this guy can do all kinds of stuff. Like, if you had told me originally that he was going to do the X-Men and you would like it,
I would
be a thing he can do, but...
You know what says a lot about him? Is basically every writer at Marvel is being forced into Civil War, and he's just like, nope.
Yeah.
I'm going to very God begrudgingly touch on Captain America.
Because I guess I have to,
he's
yeah.
the main
yeah.
character in it. Yeah. And Daredevil's not
I know,
even going to be
he
involved.
Still didn't. That's the power. There's two main characters in the Civil War. It's Iron Man and Captain America.
Yeah.
And Captain America is not about Captain America in
the Civil War issues,
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. And I just very well-rounded. But then compare...
Talk about well-rounded to Brian K. Vaughan, too.
Well, that's the thing. Like, comparing to Brubaker, I don't know if Brian K. Vaughan matches. I don't know. I mean...
Oh, I think that they just have two very different voices. But the one thing about a Brubaker book is there's a slow burn to it. There's not, to coin a Connor phrase, a throw your fist in the air moment with Brubaker very often.
Yeah.
It's a story that goes
along. Punisher moment. That might be the single best moment to
that. Yeah, but that happens anytime Punisher is used sparingly.
No, but not, that was brilliant.
That's one thing, though. But, like, normally it's not, like, a lot of things. It's it's the sum of the parts more than that.
Yeah.
Vaughn... So many of those issues are just dead on, and he has such a way with the single issue format.
Yeah,
like him writing episodic stuff, he can do. He does this thing, which in comics is oddly very rare. You do one issue, and that issue is all encompassing. Now it doesn't mean there's not going to be a cliffhanger because he is master of the cliffhanger.
Yeah,
but you feel like you've got a whole issue of something, and it's just. He really knows how to work the format more than anybody I think right now.
Yeah. Well, what did he do this year?
I think so it's
he did.
Very varied.
He continued
Runaways, which is the teen superhero book.
Wasn't as good this year though, but whatever.
I didn't mind it. It was better from
the beginning.
It was
better than last year. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah,
Why the Last Man is a straight up sci-fi.
Yep. I'm on it in trades. So.
Ex Machina is basically a political book,
which honestly is consistently fantastic.
We
so
don't
give
tend
credit.
To talk about it on the show.
We did early on, but we haven't talked about it recently because it's been trugging along and the quality has stayed good.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. It's consistently good, and each issue is unto itself.
And then Pride of Baghdad, which is completely different from everything else. So it's
and Pride of Baghdad, really, you just got it. You haven't read it yet, but really, the more it is a book that the more that goes on, the more I think about it, the better I think it is.
Yeah,
You know, and he's had, you know, he just got hired to work on Lost.
Right. Yeah.
And a very good year. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Because somebody must have known his work and been like, you have to hire him because he's really
and Doctor Strange.
Really
and Doctor Strange. Yeah. Very good point. And just the fact that Whedon is taking over on Runaways, I think, is so much of a nod to the quality of that book. And like,
I just forgot Brubaker's Iron Fist.
Oh yeah, I did forget that.
Yeah.
That's like 6 or 7 books he did this year.
That's
Brubaker's,
a lot,
he's turned
Brubaker
around.
Brubaker and
like,
Vaughn have a good year. Yeah,
Vaughn, you know, all of his books have a different feel. You know, he's got all the, you know, like it used to be. You'd think that he's the quippy guy with little jokes, and then the other thing is, I've never you know heard a lot from Brubaker. Actually, not a lot of interviews or anything like that. But Vaughn is a hell of a nice, sincere guy.
Yeah.
Like, he seems to really... he just left comics, but no, I don't know if he left. Yeah. But, you know...
Mark Millar was right.
Really likes comics, you know, and he writes for him. You know, he writes for him with love, and I think those are on those pages.
Yeah. So, it's good. I mean, and like with Ex Machina, I mean, I think one of the shortcomings of our format, of our Pick of the Week format, is that unless a book gets wildly good... Mm-hmm. out of nowhere or is wildly bad, we tend not to talk about it. And the consistent book like Ex Machina goes on
loses.
Yeah, exactly, because we're just like, yep, Ex Machina was good, you know, like it wasn't.
And it was. Well, what do we have to say about it? It was still good.
It was good, yeah.
Tony Harris still kicks a ton of ass.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Oh, I love that guy's art. No, and that's why
I've heard some weird stories about him.
Well, he did Starman. Yeah. That's where I learned to love him. I actually asked him. I met him at the convention once and I was like, I don't know why I was trying to talk to him about it. I was like, so the rest of the Starman's going to come out? He's like, yep. And I was like, oh, he doesn't want to talk to me.
Awkward hover. So that's writers. What about artists? Were there any artists that stood out for you?
Oddly enough, as we started talking about this, like the writers were the people who seemed to make a difference to us. Have we passed the era of the hot artist?
We're definitely in the era of the writer.
The artist is the difference maker?
If you look at X Factor, I mean, how important is the artist?
Right, but Lark. Michael Lark on Daredevil.
But then again, look at 52. If 52 had an actually competent artist on it, how much better would the book be?
It would go from
being a middling book to a very good book.
It's very possible, but I think that, you know, along with those I don't want to call them superstar artists, but those artists whose work really stands out, the McNiven, the Cassaday, the Jimmy Chung.
I love how McNiven and Jimmy Chung, weren't blips on the radar.
If you want to know,
I think it's interesting.
They are, in a way.
You know what says a lot about the writers, the artists this year was, I felt like a lot of the really good artists had these low points. Where
like Jim Lee?
No, like McNiven, when he after he had the delay, the art has not been the same since before the delay.
Yeah,
and we were looking at some of his older art before the show, and it's definitely not the quality of that period. Mm-hmm. He sort of hit like a overworked or rushed period. Even the writers, the artists have sort of taken a hit. I think at some
it feels
some
like when these new guys come up and they recognize their talent, they put them on a big project.
Yeah.
And then everybody's watching them, and then they're under a lot of pressure.
Right.
And they don't get to, the difference between Lark and McNiven is Lark's on a book that, you know, people love it, but they don't really expect much out of Daredevil, I don't get. You know what I mean? Like, right. Daredevil's going to chug along, and people are going to say it's good, but it's not something that all fanboys are, like, up in arms about, you know, for anything. Whereas when you're on Civil War, that's a big deal book.
Right.
And everybody's watching it, and it's, you know, if there's a 2-week delay... The problem is that
comic fans as a whole are, I wouldn't want to be in the artist seat at all dealing with us. You know what I mean? Like I don't see how McNiven can go.
Expectations.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm really interested to see McNiven at the cons this year to see
what's funny because last year at the New York Con I saw him just sort of unassuming at a table in Artist Alley, nobody around.
Now he's going to be both loved and reviled because of the delay. You know, like
Jim Lee's line ain't any shorter.
Right, yeah.
And Rob Liefeld's line
ain't getting any taller.
You know where people love to revile you on the message board?
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, where it's anonymous. Yeah, totally, totally. So
I would say the two artists really, for me, stood out this year. One was Finch.
Yep.
And one was Gregland.
Look at Connor with the sarcasm.
Oh wait, they were terrible.
I still like Finch. I miss Finch on Avengers. He was good. He was bad on Moon Knight, but which I've dropped, by the way.
Oh, you did finally?
Really? Yeah, I'm not getting any
work
done. I'm done. Not that it looks like it's coming out anytime soon, so why not? But I don't know. But it was cool.
Darwin Cook.
Darwin Cook.
Although, really, next year I think it's going to be the test for Darwin
Cook. I feel like right at the end of this year, like, you're starting to see his footprints in a few places. He's got the Confidential, Superman Confidential, but he's not drawing that, but... You know, and he's got the Spirit, and then there was the Spirit Batman thing, and
right, and the New Frontier All Absolute, which is a reminder, of how great that was.
I have a reminder every day on my desk.
Yeah,
that figure's awesome.
Yeah, I heard it's a good action figure. Yeah, he's cool. So if you had to look back in 2006, what was your favorite comic themed thing or moment or anything comic thing in 2006?
You know, I don't know if I can give my favorite thing, but I think one of the phenomena that had happened this year that we do need to touch on very briefly is the Scott Pilgrim phenomenon.
Like, yeah, as far three as come out this year?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
This book, I'd never heard of it, comes from out of nowhere, and that's like, that feels like the indie book of the year, you know.
Yeah, I feel it's hard for me to say because I feel like I'm coming late to the party.
But
that's why I asked if it came out this year.
Out of nowhere, in the middle of this year, though, all of a sudden
everyone's like, "You got to read
Scott Pilgrim." Exactly, Scott Pilgrim.
And it was a lot of fun. Like, I can't wait till 4 comes out. So
I just want to know what the hell.
Yeah.
They're gonna.
That was a good discovery. That was one of my favorite discoveries of this year.
So that's definitely one of my favorite discoveries of the year. I think that not now, but soon, not later, you will look at Pride of Baghdad, and people will refer to that in the same terms as a lot of these seminal books. I don't want to call it Mouse. I don't want to go that far. Right. But
up there on this
definitely
shelf.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So. I feel like the talk about that book has died down.
It has. Yeah.
I think for me, one of the highlights was one of the great things about 1 year later was Batman and the Batman whole family of books really got a jolt. Because they were really languishing before.
That's so weird. He came out of left field like that. I wouldn't have expected him to.
So. It came out of, I mean, they were not very good.
But now you can be proud to wear your Batman.
Detective Comics and Batman and Robin are all great books.
For me,
the regular artists and writers are on the book.
For me, the best kind of moment was probably more personal, but it was just our triumphant return to San Diego, and because that was just a fantastic week of just comics.
I thought you meant literally.
No.
God, when you say it, I'm tired.
Because the thing is that it was a very good, because the last time we went in like 2003 or 2004 or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was kind of dying down. It was kind of like, okay, kind of same old shit again. It felt new again this year, and I think that's part of because of the quality of the comics, because there's so much to talk about, so much to do.
I don't know if comics are really better right now, but there's a lot more energy around them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's so much to talk about.
Yep, exactly.
It's
plus
fun to talk,
you know,
about
with the podcasts and with everything else going out there. I mean, like, it's a cool little world. Yeah, no,
everybody's like, this year we've been able to get to know creators like we never have before.
Yep.
And I that'd be a good thing or a bad thing. Like, I can listen to an interview with, you know, I'll say somebody. I'll go ahead. I'm trying to think of somebody who I really like. Like, I heard interviews with Brian Vaughn, and I really liked him. Like, you know, he was very sincere. Meanwhile, you know, I've heard other interviews with, like, Todd McFarlane, and I feel the same way about him I always thought I did. And the same kind of thing. Or, but even, I think this year, I heard interviews with Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams, two older guys who, you know, you would think maybe I don't have. They're fascinating to listen to.
Neil Adams
in a way that Stan Lee isn't.
Yeah.
Because listen, Stan Lee is fascinating. He's the grandfather and everything. But when he talks in sound bites. And he doesn't really.
Well, that's because they're all recorded because he's been dead for 15 years.
Doombot's only got so much memory.
Yeah, exactly. He's a Doombot. I'm telling you. So, all in all, I think 2006 was a good year. I mean, like Josh, I think you said it right. Like, I'm not sure the comics were that much better than the years before, and they were kind of bogged down with some of the events and stuff like that. But it was a good year to be a comic fan.
Yeah, and if you're a comic book publisher. It's odd. You would have thought with the introduction of message boards that, you know, that would have helped a lot, and it did, but it almost just increased the negative energy.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the podcasts and the things have increased the positive energy.
Yeah.
Around stuff.
It almost feels like the culture is at a turning point.
Yeah.
Where like all these new technologies and things are allowing more interaction, and things are not going to be the same going forward as they were.
Yeah.
Previously.
It's very Renaissance-esque.
Definitely.
So, cool. So I think we've been talking for far too long.
I know we have.
I think we should wrap this sucker up.
I'm not as tired now as I was in San Diego, though.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. So, all right, cool.
My legs hurt for 3 days after San Diego.
Well, oh, God, and the chafing. we did have the Gold Bond.
Gold Bond medicated powder.
Yeah, so MVP. So don't forget to head over to ifanboy.com. If you liked what we talked about, we do a weekly podcast talking about comics, so check that out, as well as there's some great discussion on ifanboy.com on the site for you to read and for you to partake in.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697.
You could also go to myspace.com/ifanboy or newly comicspace.com/ifanboy, which works a hell of a lot better than MySpace, but it's basically the same thing.
And you can head over to dig.com and go into the podcast section and do a search for ifanboy and give us a couple of digs.
This is our new favorite thing for you to do right
now. Yeah, exactly.
Let's go dig us.
Also after you do that, you can head over to Podcast Alley and vote for us or write a review or go to iTunes and write a review. Or the best thing you can do is if you like the show, tell your friends about it. Tell the people at your comic book store, check it out. So I think as we look back on 2006, I think we should thank our listeners.
Totally. You
know, for a great year. Shit.
For a great year. I know we gushed about it during our year anniversary show, but it's never too late. So.
I think thank the listeners because, like, one thing we don't get to tell you guys is how many emails we get from people who take the time out after listening to it to write in and say, thank you, I really enjoy it.
Right.
And, you know, if anything, that will keep us going.
Honestly, that's been the one thing because we've been doing the site for years and we love doing it from our love of comics, but the participation and knowing that thousands of people are listening to us talk about comics and tens of people are coming to the site. but lots of people are coming. More people than we ever thought would come to ifanboy.com
and they're participating. They're there a lot.
Thank you, because without you folks, we wouldn't be doing it. So
that's it for 2006.
So we'll see you in 2007.